Invite you to open your Bibles to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. There are three verses we're looking at today. Paul was talking about going one day and standing before the Bema seat in Acts. He had to go to stand at judgment. And for Paul, this was a daily reminder. He was going to stand before God one day. So I want to ask you this question. Are you aiming too low? Sometimes we go shooting and my wife is an excellent shot. And she hits the bullseye a lot more than I do. And sometimes I find out I'll group a pattern and they'll be a little low. They'll just be below the bullseye, below the target even sometimes. And what I realize is that I'm aiming too low, that somehow or another I'm not aiming right. I'm not aiming too low. But I want to tell you this. You can do that not just with a weapon. You can do that with your life. You can aim too low. You can miss the target entirely. In fact, I realized as I was preparing this message, you know, the word for sin means to miss the mark. But I don't think it just means to miss the mark and you do this thing wrong. I think it means to miss the mark of life. That what we were made to do, what you were created to do, sin means that you miss the mark. You don't do what you were made to do because you were made for more than just eating and drinking and getting up and going to work and coming home and going to bed and watching TV. You were made for more than that. You were made for something so much higher that sin is missing the mark of life. It is missing the mark. It is not finding out what you ought to be. And here's the worst thing. You could be president of the United States, and if God's call was for you to be a missionary to Africa, you would miss the mark if you took the other. Because walking with God is discovering what God has for you and doing that with your life. It is aiming for the right mark in life. Sin is missing the mark. If we're not careful, we'll always aim too low. You know, every earthly trophy fades. Every earthly trophy, it means you've just got to do something else to get it maybe next year. Every earthly ambition can be too low. As you watch people, they get what they thought they wanted, and then you see them later, and they're not happy anymore. I feel sorry for Derek Jeter. I mean, he's one of the greatest players that's ever played, one of the classiest players that's ever played. But he got down for the last time and finished. And he hung up his cleats. And it'll be a different world for him. Michael Jordan, one of the best basketball players that's ever played the game, is miserable now. Miserable. Why? He aimed too low. Just being the best basketball player doesn't satisfy because you're made for more than that. Just being the best baseball player doesn't satisfy because you're making more than that. We ought to aim for what is really, truly, ultimately important. Listen to what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5, verses 9 through 11. Therefore, we make it our aim, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Knowing, therefore, the terror of the Lord, we persuade men. And I want you to see three things very quickly from the passage. First, notice the desire that captivates Paul's ambition. What is Paul's ambition? Ambition can be a bad word. We talk about ambition, and it can be a bad word. But without any ambition, a person is really useless in life. They ought to have some ambition. It ought to be godly and guided, but there ought to be some ambition. But this word Paul says, he says, therefore, we make it our ambition. You know what Paul's talking about? He knows one day I'm going to go home. I'm going to go home to the home I was really made for. I'm going to put on the heavenly body that he has made for me. I'm going to have a heavenly home that he's prepared for me, and I'm going to go home. This life is not all there is. I'm going to go home. And if I'm going to go home, I want to, on the day that I get home, not be ashamed when I get home. I want on that day to do what is most important. In fact, this word here for ambition literally means we are coveting, desiring, loving the honor of this one thing. What honor do you love this morning? Say, I want people to know I'm really smart. That's too low. I want people to know I'm really pretty. It's too low. I want people to know I'm really rich. Too low. Too low. You're missing the mark. I want people to know I know God. And I want to know him more. Paul said, this one thing I do. He said, that I may know him. Know him. I want to know God. See, Paul said, I've got one ambition. I want to make it my ambition, whether present or absent, to be well-pleasing to him. I want to see him smile on that day. Paul says he desires to please Jesus. Like a soldier pleases his commander. Paul writes in 2 Timothy chapter 1, chapter 2 and verse 1, and he says this. He said, you therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one engaged in warfare entangles himself in the affairs of this life that he may please him who has called him to be a soldier. One day we're going to stand before the commander, and on that day we don't want to be ashamed. On that day we want to be our best for him. On that day I picked up a book and was reading the story of a man who became a ranger, an airborne ranger, and he was telling about the grueling test that you had to go through just to get into ranger school. He said he had gone through the airborne training and he had finished airborne, and then he wanted to be a ranger. And so he stepped up to the next level, and he said they got in their barracks at 11 o'clock at night, and at 2 in the morning they were awakened. At 2 in the morning, and they were forced out in the yard, and at 2 in the morning they've had 2 hours of sleep, and they made them lie in the dying cockroach position. And the dying cockroach position is where you just lay flat on your back with your head up, your hands up, and your feet up in the air. He was there for 45 minutes in that position. They had 142 men there, and they had to get rid of 70 right off the bat. And everybody whose head touched the ground, everybody whose arms went down, out. And he said one guy put his head down 2 minutes before they called it quits. But you see, he said, I didn't have any quit in me. He said, I wasn't the strongest guy there. He said, big, strong guys were dropping like flies. He said, I just reached back in myself and thought, this is what I've been made for. I know this is what God has called me. He's a Christian. He said, I know this is what God's called me to do. And he said, every ounce of energy in him took just to hold his arms up. Why? Because he wanted to please his commander. He wanted to please his commander. I tell you, every soldier that fights for anything worth fighting for wants to do what is right on that day, so that when he stands before his commander, he hears him say, well done. I've told you many times the story of me in ROTC. I took ROTC in high school back in the day when it was a requirement. Everybody had to take it. You had to shine. We had to learn how to shine our shoes. We had to learn to clean our rifles. We had to learn to describe our rifle. We had to learn how to say the right thing every time, to come to attention, to stand at attention. And I had to learn all those things. And I had to have my shoes polished. I had to have my brass shined. I learned how to use brass. Oh, I hate this stuff still. But I had to learn how to use it. I got my shoes where I could see my face in them. Why anybody would want to do that is beyond me, but that's what my commander wanted. You know what? I only had one desire. I wanted to please my commander. That's it. I wanted to do everything right. I wanted to please him on that day. I want to tell you this, one day we're going to stand before God, and Paul knew that. And Paul said, it's my desire. And on that day, my brass is shiny, my shoes are polished, my uniform is pressed, my weapon is clean and ready. And on that day, I stand unashamed. Paul wanted to please his commander. Paul wanted to win the crown. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 24, Paul says this. He says, we run. He said, everybody runs, but only one receives the prize. He says, I want to run to win the prize. I'm not content with anything less. I'm going to run to win the prize. Why? Because they're going to have a contest. Now, in the Greek games, all you got was an olive wreath, but it was the glory that was with that honored olive wreath that made men run with everything that was in them. And Paul said, I'm going to run with everything in me because I want to win the prize. I want to win the prize. Folks, I want to stand before him and hear him say, well done. I want to stand before him unashamed. This is one of my favorite verses. This is a verse I pray for you and for me every day in Philippians 1. Paul says, Philippians 1, but it's okay, I know it. According to my earnest expectation and my hope, in nothing I shall be ashamed. So now also Christ will be magnified in my mortal body, whether by life or by death. Two things. I don't want to be ashamed, and I want to magnify Christ. That was Paul's goal. Paul had one desire: to magnify Jesus. He didn't have a lesser desire. He had a great desire. He wanted to magnify Jesus Christ. He wanted in this life to make Christ known, to know him and to make him known. That was his goal. And in the next life, he wanted to stand unashamed. I want to stand unashamed. What about you? Do you really think about that day? You know, I was telling the class, I will never apologize for challenging you to give to sacrificially to missions or to read your Bible or to live for Jesus. I will never apologize for that because I know that on the day that you stand before him, you don't want to be ashamed. Nobody's going to say, well, I read my Bible too much. That ain't going to happen there. Nobody's going to say, whoo, gave too much to missions. Nobody's going to do that there. All of us are going to look at the one whose hands are nail scarred, who laid down his life for us, and we're going to say, oh, what I could have done. What I could have done. So Paul said, my desire captivates me. It's my ambition. I want to please Jesus. I want to finish well. I want to stand unashamed. I want to cross the finish line and not be ashamed. How about you? Notice not only the desire. Why does he have that desire? Because of the day that dominates his heart. Notice the day that dominates his heart. Paul says this, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive for the things done in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad, good or evil. Now notice, let me just bring out seven or eight things right here. Number one, it's inescapable. You're not going to avoid this day. You can avoid court. You can get out of stuff all here. You can sneak your way around, lie your way out. Men skip the country and they flee. Soldiers go AWOL and they go live in another country for the rest of their lives. But beloved, this is the one day we will not avoid. We must. You will stand before Jesus. You will. There will be no escaping this day. His gaze is relentless. His eye is sure. His knowledge is complete. His heart is pure. His judgment is perfect. You will stand before him. Notice second truth about it. It's universal. We must all. Nobody's going to avoid this day. It's imperative. You're going to do it, and everybody's going to do it. All of us are going to do it. All people, every person on planet Earth will stand before the judge of all the earth. Every person. Notice the third truth about it. It's individual. Each of us may receive. It's not going to just be judgment of all people in a general fashion. You and I, every one of us, individually, are going to be brought before the judgment seat of Christ. I will. You will. Everything, nothing will be hidden. Everything. Every one of us. The God who knows all things, who gave men the wisdom to create a video, knows how to replay the video of a life. Everything. There's no hiding from this day. It is individual. Fourth, it's impartial. It's the judgment seat of Christ. He knows everything. He takes into account all factors. He knows everything about everybody and every situation everybody's in. Nothing gets hidden from his gaze. He's the one who can look into the heart of a man or a woman and know whether their sin is forgiven and know whether their heart is hard. He could look at the Pharisees and know what was going on in their hearts. And he could look at women who were brought to him broken and in sin and know that they had a heart to believe. He knows. It's impartial. It is incontestable. We will receive for the things done in the body. You may appeal in America. You may not like the verdict you get and appeal to a higher court. But beloved, on this day, there's no higher court. This is the final court, the Supreme Court of the universe. On this day, every person will stand before him and they will give an account. Every one of us. There will be no arguing with the judge. The sad thing about any attempt to argue with this judge, you know, people say, why do you go knock on these doors in Olive Branch? Well, there's a lot of reasons. One, we care about their souls. And we want them to stand before Jesus. We want them to know him. We want them to know that they can be forgiven of their sins. But there's another reason. I had a friend, fellow pastor that I really love and admire, James Strait. James was at a church before me, and he would go out in his little farming community, and we'd go out and knock the doors, and James would go witnessing to him, and they'd laugh at him, you know, mock him because he's coming to share the gospel with him. And he said, well, there's another reason why I came, because one day you're going to stand before God, and you'll never be able to say, nobody told me, because he will replay today, and he will say, you see him, I sent him to you, and look, you laughed. You remember, all you who are faithful to go out week in and week out every time we go and we knock on those doors and people mock us and they slam the door in our faces, you just remember this. One day, the king will say, I sent them by. And you shut the door in their face. You can't say, I didn't tell you. You see, it's incontestable. There's not going to be any arguments on the judgment day. Well, he didn't know what I really meant. He'll be the one who can replay your thoughts. Every thought will be just as loud as every word to him. It's incontestable. You can get away with it today, but you can't get away with it on the day. It is the day that we stand before God. Fourth, it's inclusive. So I was reading this morning, I set a goal to read my chronological New Testament in Greek. Paul uses a unique word here for bad. He uses a word, not our normal word, there's a normal word for evil that he doesn't use here. He uses a word that's literally, we get our English word foul from it. Foul, not like foul bird, but foul as in smell or foul something. Well, that's the word he uses. And he said, what he has practiced. He used this, not the normal word for do, but to practice something. The practices of a life. This is the exact same phrase in Greek. Jesus said, everyone practicing what is foul hates the light and doesn't come to it. Now, let me show you what that means. It is inclusive. God is, and this is what's so cool. God, in this verse, is very clear. He is not going to judge on the snapshot. He's not going to pull up a snapshot and say, look, here you are at 17. Look at you saying that cuss word. Here you are at 23. Look what you're doing. He's not going to do that. This word means, practice means he's going to evaluate on the video. And he's going to look for progress and growth in grace. And we're going to see some blips and we're going to be ashamed. We're not going to like those. But it's only going to be a temporary, fleeting shame because he's going to look at the video. And you're going to receive for the good. But there are going to be those who are betting everything on the snapshot. They're going to say, well, Pastor, at 10, I prayed this prayer. There's my snapshot. What's your life look like now? Well, it's a flat line, like I'm dead spiritually, but still, I prayed that prayer at 10. Let me tell you something. On the video, that's practicing evil. That's what it is. It's not moving up. It's moving toward hell. That's what it is. Finally, it's exhaustive. Everything. Philip Edgecombe Hughes, who wrote the commentary, one of the commentaries that I look at in 2 Corinthians, said, this is a proof of the absolute deity of Jesus because he knows everything, just like the Father. There's nothing hidden from him. In fact, it's like what the Lord said to Samuel in 1 Samuel 16:7. Don't look on the outward. Why? Man looks on the outward, but where does God look? The Lord looks on the heart. This is the Lord, Yahweh God. And Jesus is Yahweh God who looks at the heart and will expose everything that is done. It is that day that drives Paul. Why? Because Paul knows there's no escaping that day. Paul knows that he's going to be there that day. He knows that everybody else is going to be there that day. And he knows that they're going to stand at the judgment seat that day. And he doesn't want them to be ashamed. And so finally we see the dread that motivates his ministry. Look there in verse, and look there at the last phrase. Knowing therefore the terror of the Lord. Now I want you to hear me. Okay, Paul loved Jesus more than I do. Oh, I don't even begin to know what Paul experienced for Jesus. But Paul was afraid of the Lord. He was afraid. He understood that there is terror in his presence. He understood that those who know him tremble at his presence. He understood that there is a day when we will stand before him and his white hot gaze will expose everything and we will be ashamed. And Paul dreaded that day. And Paul knew that there would be people there that day who would hear him say, depart from me, I never knew you. It scared him to death. And that dread motivated Paul to go preach the gospel to everybody of the Lord. This is the Old Testament phrase found throughout the Proverbs, the fear of the Lord. What is the fear of the Lord? It's the realization that one day I'll stand before God. And that day ought to eclipse every other day. No matter what you think, no matter what else you do, one day you'll stand before Jesus and it ought to scare you to death. The dread of that day ought to motivate you to do right. It ought to motivate you to live for Jesus. It ought to motivate you to remember that you could give an account. It could be today, beloved. What if you stepped out into eternity today? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows that they have 70 years? Just a few weeks ago, some of our precious youth were mourning the loss of a friend in high school. He was killed in a car wreck. Who knows? Beloved, there's a day when we'll stand before Jesus. No other day compares. All your successes in this life can be erased by one minute there. Do not aim low. Do not aim low. Do not settle for less, because Paul understood the future of all men is that everybody stand before Jesus. Everybody. And this is a serious day. C.S. Lewis wrote this. In the end, the face, which is the delight or the terror of the universe, must be turned upon each of us, either with one expression or the other, either conferring glory inexpressible, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things, I'll make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Or inflicting shame that can never be cured or disguised. Depart from me. I never knew you. What will you hear on that day? What will you hear? Child of God, my challenge to you today is to take this day above every day. Set your heart that your ambition, the one thing you prize more than anything else, is not just to do well in school, although that is noble. It's not just to be a good employee at work, although that is important. But all those are subsumed under the heading, I want to please Jesus the Christ. I want to live my life to please him. Would you bow with me for prayer? Beloved, this is a time of serious call. I just ask you, with your heads bowed and your eyes closed and your hearts serious as you can make them, are you ready for that day? Are you ready for that day? The only day that matters, that day.